being curious is the antidote to being judgmental. If I'm curious about you and your experience, then I'm not sitting here judging you and your experience. And so it's a more socially healthy way to move through my world. And so be curious.
You're listening to the Happy Doc Student Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing clarity to the often mysterious doctoral process. Do you feel like you're losing your mind? Let me and my guests show you how to put more joy in your journey and graduate with your sanity, health, and relationships intact. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Frederick, and this is episode 47. In this episode, I welcome back Dr. Peter Williams. Peter completed his PhD at Texas A&M in Educational Human Resource Development and was teaching faculty how to teach online before the turn of the century. Currently, he's Associate Professor and Interim Assistant Department Head of Ed Leadership at Texas A&M Commerce. He's been teaching and advising doctoral students since 2009 and loves working with adults to figure out how to make sense of their complex worlds. When he's not helping his students exercise their curiosity muscle, he's strumming his ukulele and roasting coffee. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Heather. It's good to be back.
My motivation for having you here today was that a couple of months ago, I was driving from Arizona out to California, and I was binge listening to some Doc 101 episodes. And on one of those episodes, you touched on this concept of curiosity and how important it is as a trait for doctoral students. So I thought, how much fun would it be to have Peter on the show and really unpack this idea of being curious?
Yeah, it's fascinating, but we don't often connect curiosity with advanced academic studies, do we?
I don't know if we connect curiosity with anything that we do in the educational system anymore.
Isn't that curious?
You know, it really is. And when I was prepping for today's show, I revisited some of Sir Ken Robinson's material, and he argues that the educational system is kind of set up to untrain the curious and creative mind because we say things like there's only one answer and it's in the back of the book.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've been through this system for years and years and years before you get to a doctoral project where we suddenly ask you to kind of think outside the box.
Right. Inquire, right? Inquire, inquiry kind of assumes, in my mind anyway, it assumes that there is an intrinsic need to know or a want and a desire to know, which is one aspect of curiosity. I guess we could say through the 20th century, we did the what Freire called the banking model of education, right? Which is just that, you know, you pour information into heads and they retain it or not. Well, you know, that totally undermines and neglects the curiosity of that we all know children come up with naturally because they drive us crazy between ages 3 and 5 by asking why, and other kinds of questions.
A lot of the experience I have is by the time I get a candidate that I'm working with on their doctoral project, they've stopped asking why. I wonder why they got those results. I wonder what would happen if they did this with a different population in a different time period. I wonder what would happen if they asked different questions.
Yeah. And when I begin a sentence with them, I wonder what, in that sort of way or in similar ways, about half the time I sense a degree of frustration with like, well, tell me what I need to do next. Let's wonder for a while.
I think that's the number one thing that I hear faculty feeling frustrated about is the student saying, just tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. Because that's how you get into a doctoral program. You're really good at doing what educators tell you to do.
Yeah, isn't that true?
And then you come to us and we say, wait, stop. We want you to do something different. So similarly, when I have those conversations with students, it's not just frustration. Sometimes I feel a lot of discomfort. They're not comfortable with going there.
I wonder if that's because there has been so little positive reinforcement of it throughout the decades of their academic experience or their exposure and their walk through schooling environments.
So do you think that this is a trait that people either have or they don't have? Or do you think it's a skill that as educators we could enhance? Or is it maybe this really interesting mix of both?
Ooh, so I have an opinion, and my opinion is based on reading of some of the psychological literature, because in psychology, they've looked at it for, William James wrote about curiosity. You probably know that better than I do. But I think it's kind of talked about as more traits, but with somewhat of a state value in the sense of it's related to personality types, but it can change. It is somewhat malleable with training, so to speak. Well, let me give you an example. When I was growing up, I was shy, I was introverted, and I didn't feel comfortable meeting people I didn't already know. And so when I learned how to navigate a couple of the verbal interactions at the beginning of meeting someone and asking a couple of questions, it helped me to realize that's a pleasurable thing, right? To meet someone and to begin a conversation, to see someone smile, to be glad to meet someone, even if for a brief time, you know, at the checkout counter and the grocery store or whatever, but that there is pleasure in that moment. And realizing that and being able to get to that point reinforced this idea that I like to meet new people. And so I kind of trained myself with the help of other people, obviously, out of that fear of what might go wrong if someone doesn't like me, for example. And so I think repeated incidents of the preponderance of my experience over those years was, yeah, other people enjoy meeting and having a little conversation. Sometimes humor was involved, you know, have a little laugh together and then go on down the road. And it was pleasurable for both people. And I think in a parallel way, curiosity doesn't get enough reinforcement. So where someone may be out of the box, slightly less curious or slightly more curious, I think we can shape our curiosity so that we do get a good bit of positive reinforcement, because there's a lot of pleasure to learning something, learning how things work and understanding that, oh, I can gain an understanding if I first admit, oh, I don't know stuff and I want to know, I want to understand.
I love that you brought up this experience of pleasure, because I was reflecting back on some of the different types of students I've mentored. And the ones who really seem to enjoy the process are the ones who are curious.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're getting pleasure along the way, right?
Right.
Ooh, and they come to you and say, ooh, I got to tell you about something I just found. I learned this.
Yeah, or I thought my research question's going to be this, but then I found these other articles, and now I'm wondering if they should be this. And instead of that feeling like I took one step forward, two steps back, they're actually excited that as this is unfolding, it's becoming more and more interesting.
Yeah, and I would point out that sometimes when they have that sense of excitement that they're getting a more clearly defined, or at least something more in line with their passion, or something that they've developed a new passion about, that even if it's a step or two back, it seems like an exciting path forward. So there can be both the excitement and a sense of frustration that cohabitate at the same time. It's like, I took a step back, but boy, this is more fun.
Right. And therefore more motivating.
And more motivating. So the co-occurrence, I guess, of a little bit of the negative frustration, but the positive curiosity is pretty powerful. And it happens a lot of times with this, where we often assume you either have to be feeling good or feeling bad. And sometimes you're feeling both, right? You feel like, ooh, it's a little frustrating that I had to ditch that research question that I'd worked hard on for all this time.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking it feels like this concept of curiosity may be almost the secret sauce to someone moving through their doctoral journey in a way that allows for this coexisting of this crazy range of different emotions during this process. But if you had an anchor of curiosity, of always asking things like, oh, I wonder if, or isn't it interesting that, it could totally reframe any potential challenge or barrier.
Yeah, it's an intrinsic motivation, right? It's an intrinsic need to know or desire to understand or seek novelty. There's an aspect of that. It gets us up and moving. It gets us to dive back into these vast library databases, for example, or which are all digital now. When I did mine, I mean, I had to go into the stacks, and I won't assume that.
I did too, Peter. I did too, with the index card, walk up and down the aisles.
Oh boy.
I remember when.
We were very young when we did that, clearly. We were like 12 or 13, but the good old days. But I remember getting lost in the stacks. I started to say just getting lost in the stacks, and I had to preface it with back when we went to a library and walked amongst the shelves of physical books. I remember a few times getting lost and just going off on what I would call rabbit trails because I got curious, and sometimes I had to rein it in because this search for novel or this, ooh, there's something new. I never heard of that. I'm going to look at it. You know, it leads you to who knows where. And there's a sense of, I've got to regulate in some ways so that I don't use that to avoid doing some of the work that I might want to do. So just following every squirrel in the library, so to speak, there's a sense of pleasure in that, but that's not really what we're talking about, because at some point it becomes an avoidance mechanism, right?
Yeah, it becomes the ultimate procrastinating tool.
Yeah, exactly. And we're already way too good at procrastinating. So
students may naturally come with this, and you were sharing that as you're chairing, you might engage in some very specific type of questioning with the student to maybe enhance or facilitate this. Do you have any other techniques or tips that you give to students or faculty in terms of, hey, let's just be curious?
Often at the beginning of the process, when they're trying to figure out what they want to study. So in the programs I teach in right now in the Ed Leadership Program, these are school professionals who often come with a kind of a set of problems of practice that they are passionate about, or, you know, current challenges. And so they come with this general idea of they want to study, you know, how do you onboard successfully new teachers so that they stay in the profession? That's a pretty common one. And I asked them, well, what is it about that onboarding of new teachers or the mentoring of early career teachers that we don't understand yet? What is it we don't understand? And this, in a way, helps them move beyond, well, I want to show that my mentoring program works.
Right.
It's like, okay, so does it work? Tell me what you don't know about it. Because in research, we're trying to discover something. What is it we don't understand? And I try to point out, you know, what you know, your knowledge is bounded, as is everybody's, and it encompasses your lived experience. But your lived experience doesn't necessarily generalize to general principles of whatever. It might inform those, just like qualitative research and case study research can really inform general principles, and it can certainly inform local practice. But your lived experience informs your knowledge, but your knowledge is limited. So what is it you don't understand? And then when you talk about, well, what do we know? Well, that's we as a profession. That's we in the field. And how do we know, how do you know what we know? It's through the formal literature and you know, what some call the gray literature, conference proceedings, and maybe even more scholarly leaning blog posts and so forth. So that's kind of what I try to do, is think about what are the boundaries around your knowledge? Because part of, I think, of curiosity comes from this awareness of the limits of my knowledge. I don't know. There's a lot I don't know.
Isn't that almost the magic bullet? You get to a point in your program where you realize, wow, there's more that I don't know than I do know.
Yeah. And the closer you get to a phenomenon, the more aspects of it you see and you realize, ooh, this is way more complex than I thought. There's a lot to learn here. And some that's intimidating, and it can be both intimidating and exciting at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, I love those dual emotions. You were talking about a student coming with knowledge and knowledge is bound. And we talk a lot on this podcast about Bloom's taxonomy and that infamous pyramid and how we're so stuck in those bottom levels. And then you come into a doctoral program where we're giving you free rein to actually create knowledge. And wow, this is something that we don't ask you to do a lot in education.
That's true. And it's interesting you bring it up, because I think, you know, I started to notice a distinct shift, or a potential shift 15 or 18 years ago when we got in the digital, with our digital tools, a little bit more creation oriented tools in the hands of common people like you and me, who didn't have the high end video and photo suites, et cetera, et cetera. And we could produce our own content. You got blogs and you can produce and publish. And, you know, we know that's a sword that cuts both ways, but I didn't really see a change in education. You see some maker workshops and stuff like that in the lower grades and common education in K-12. In graduate school, though, we have pretty much stuck to an information delivery and some application. Suddenly, at the doctoral level, we tell you, for example, getting into a piece of research, you gather, let's say, qualitative research, you gather reams of interview and observational data. And then one of your rounds of analysis is to describe what's there. It's just, what is it that you see and don't see? But then as you get into the analysis, this is where curiosity kicks in again. I mean, it's been kicked in all along, but curiosity kicks into the imagination. And it's like, what's going on at more latent levels here? There's all this stuff at the surface that you need to describe and maybe categorize and look at through different theoretical lenses to see what's there, obviously. But what are some latent things? What's the story tying all this together? And that's where I think curiosity really can become a motivator in the doctoral process too, in the sense of, can you sit and wonder, why did they tell me this story? So if you have people tell you stories about a time when they felt supported as an early career professional, for example, and a time they felt unsupported by their boss. So they're going to tell you little stories and you wonder, why did they tell the stories they told? And you start to wonder things that are not obviously there. And I think that's a deeper level of analysis that has to be driven, in my mind, by curiosity.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know of any programs, and if you're in one that has a class in curiosity, I'd love to hear about it. But we don't build into the classes, let's talk about divergent thinking. Let's talk about curiosity and the role it might play on this journey. And as you're collecting data, here's the part where we'd like you to stop and actually not do, but just be with the process and think about the story that's emerging for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's starting to be a lot written about other ways besides just the purely analytical way of breaking things down into their component parts and then looking at each component part, even when we're dealing with qualitative research. Quantitative research, that's the nature of it. We try to quantify whatever is quantifiable and count and then compare various aspects of reality that we've measured in some way, right? And arts-based methods often are mentioned, and that's a good search term. But when you get to the point where you're having to make sense of the data and say, what's the story behind the obvious, sometimes letting your brain work in slightly different ways can be helpful. And some have suggested poetry or art in other forms, visual arts, you know, drawing something. I tell my students regularly, and this is totally within the bounds of fairly established processes, draw a diagram. And part of the reason, it's like, okay, diagrams are not innovative in and of themselves, but it is a way that you can use the more the visualizing part of your brain to say, what's going on here? Draw pictures. And that can be very helpful.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, because just last week I was interviewing Vern and he was talking about mind mapping and engaging both parts of the brain through color and diagrams and pictures, whether you wanted to actually do it yourself or use a program to help you make these connections at a deeper level.
And I think the connections are an important piece, because you get all the component parts, but how are they connected into a story, right? And what's the story here? I kind of keep saying that because we tell stories, and stories assume that our listener has a curiosity to find out what comes next.
Yeah. The dissertation, it's like the great mystery story, really, right? You're leading a reader through this mystery that you're going to help solve.
That's exactly right. It should be written like a story, not with a dead body up front, like a murder mystery, right? Necessarily. Hopefully not.
But depending on the program.
Depending on the program, right. But certainly early on, you've got to get your hooks in the reader. Even if you're writing like a grant proposal, for example, which is not dissimilar from a research proposal, you want your reader to read that first sentence and not be bored to tears. You want your reader to think, ooh, I want to read the second sentence. And after the first paragraph, you want them to say, I can't stop.
Right.
And while you may not write a page turner like Stephen King or some of our popular writers, you do need to write it in a way that the reader wants to keep reading. I tell my students when they're writing their chapter one of their proposal, introduce your characters early, draw your readers in so that by the time you get to your problem statement, three or four pages in, the tension has been building. And you're wondering, how are all these things connected? I don't know. And the problem is the body in a murder mystery. It's, now we have this tension that has to be resolved some way. And how are we going to deal with that? Purpose statement, research question.
You're engaging your reader and getting their curiosity going.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think tapping into students' own curiosity and having them formulate it. It is formulaic in some ways, though the proposal, in many ways, it's formulaic. But the writing style should be one that induces curiosity, that elicits curiosity, that uses curiosity to pull people along. And to do that, you've got to know your own curiosity, know what's pulling you along, too, and be very aware of that. That goes to self-awareness, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, this idea of telling a story, someone recommended to me way back when, ask your students right up front, tell the story to someone else, someone who's not in their program, someone who's not their chair, their committee member. Tell the story of your research to someone else, because as you're telling that story, you'll understand, you'll be able to see where they get lost in the storyline. Where did you leave them behind? What characters did you leave out? What information did you not set the stage for? And it would be a helpful way to just frame their larger research topic.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I wasn't good at it. I'm just remembering being in my dissertation research, and someone asked me at work, well, what are you researching? I told them, and they just looked at me with a blank look and said, why are you doing that? And I didn't have an answer. It's like, I don't know. I got to do something. It's pretty pitiful, isn't it?
Well, we've come a long way, haven't we, Peter? Yeah.
Yes.
One of the things that I've noticed after listening to that podcast episode a couple months ago and really thinking to myself, I want to engage my students and inspire them through inviting them to exercise this curiosity muscle. What I've noticed is that it feels like I'm allowing this element of play. Because I'll say, well, what I'd like you to wonder about this, or what if you got curious about this? Just play with the ideas. And as you kind of lighten things up a little bit, I think it maybe serves as this portal for some really important insights.
Yeah, I think it really does. Because when we start playing with something, then our anxiety goes down, doesn't it? And it doesn't mean that there's no anxiety, because if we're playing, we might be having some fun competition. If you and I are playing a game of some sort, but it's a more of a creative tension. And if there's a relationship there that we can do this in a playful way, it helps us to turn loose of other anxieties. And when we do that in language learning, we know this, that if we can drop the anxiety level, people learn language better. Adults learn languages a lot better. And so if I can get students to play with the data, play with the ideas and wonder about them, and then write some of their wonderings and thoughts down, it can be, lead to some very creative and productive ways of looking at whatever the phenomena is that they're interested in.
So we've got just approach everything with this open, curious mind, wonder, kind of maybe think back to what it was like when you were five and you asked things like, why is the sky blue? Right? Where do the birds sleep at night? And as a chair, maybe encouraging this atmosphere of playing with different ideas to keep the environment one that keeps the anxiety down so that people can step into this role of creator of knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, earlier on when they're doing their lit review, which is seems like a huge undertaking and very intimidating, if you can get questions to take you through the literature, you know, I wonder what it is about early career mentoring programs that works. I mean, if that's a really sincere curiosity, I know what works in my place, what in my experience has worked, but I wonder what works in other places. And if my experience is repeated or whatever, that question drives me to the literature. And that can help me formulate at least a piece of my lit review if I can let questions drive me. So I think curiosity obviously results in questions being asked and answers being pursued in some way, either by looking into the literature or by gathering new data.
This concept feels to me like this just really elegant nugget of, if we can just do more of this, not only are we more productive in producing better quality research, we have more fun doing it.
Yeah, it's fascinating just to have a conversation about it, because we don't often make space to talk about this in particular and several other corollary concepts, you know, and how curiosity sometimes leads us to laugh together and have good times. So, you know, one thing I wonder, Heather?
What's that?
Why do some people like dad jokes and other people not?
Peter, do I hear a dad joke coming on?
No, it wasn't a setup.
maybe I can put one in the show notes for the curious listeners.
You could do that.
This idea of humor, though, I think deserves a little bit more airtime, because I am a big believer in the positive outcomes of having, adopting, using a lens, a perspective of humor when things get tough. Not that we should be laughing at other people's problems, right, or things that are going on in the world. But when you take some really significant challenges that you might have as you're going through a doctoral program, and if you can look at them with truly a frame of curiosity, I wonder why this is happening. Isn't this interesting that I didn't pass my comps? See, you might be able to find something that makes you smile or even giggle. It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. That's true. And I think that we laugh at weird things. You know, humor needs a good bit more airtime, but I think it's tied to curiosity, because if I feel free to be curious about things that may be problematic in some way, like not passing my comps, which clearly is not my goal, but, you know, this happens. I failed my driving test the first time when I was 16, and I can laugh about it now. I was angry about it then because it was totally unfair.
Of course it was.
Of course it was. But we clearly don't plan for those things. But if we can learn to laugh at them very shortly after they happen and be curious about them, I think those things go hand in hand and help us cope and help us, you know, adopt a more positive outlook on what the next step forward would be. Because clearly, if you want to use the growth mindset or hope, you got to figure out what's the next step. Mm-hmm. What's the next step? And sometimes being able to laugh or be curious about it or both helps us to find that next step. Maybe sometimes it is the next step.
Yes. You know, I posed a question to some of my colleagues the other day. If you had to list one or two things that a student must have to successfully complete a degree, what would you say they were? And someone said, the ability to not take themselves too seriously.
Yes. Yes. Some of us come by that ability slowly and lately.
There's no time like the present, listeners. If you're out there hearing this and you think that maybe you're taking yourself or the process too seriously, then we're here to tell you, get curious about why you feel that way and how you might change it.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes help you inject a bit of humor into going forward. I think particularly the folks that haven't received a lot of reinforcement that they're valid or worthy or, you know, able to do whatever tasks are set before them, sometimes feel like they have to prove themselves. And so I don't want to inject frivolity into that process. But at the same time, I know that when I feel that way, sometimes I can think, you know, I'm okay making mistakes in front of other people. And it can sort of lighten the mood a little bit, particularly like I'm an assistant department chair right now. And when I point out my mistakes, oh, sorry, I messed that one up, didn't I? It kind of frees up everyone else to say, oh, yeah, oh, he's not perfect. Like, that's a novel idea. I mess up too.
We do, even decades post-doctorate, right?
That's right. That's right. We continue to mess up, hopefully in more refined ways, you know. I'm pretty good at falling upwards, maybe.
Something to strive for.
Something to strive for.
Well, Peter, yeah. Any final words of wisdom or maybe a quote related to curiosity or humor you want to share, or even a joke?
Well, I wish I had thought of a really good joke. Not that even if I have time to think about it, it really is very good, according to my listeners, but because I like dad jokes. But one thing I would say is, and it's not a direct quote, but it's a friend told me one time, being curious is the antidote to being judgmental in our social relations. If I'm curious about you and your experience, then I'm not sitting here judging you and your experience. And so it's, in my way, a more socially healthy way to move through my world. And so be curious. If being judgmental is something that annoys you and other people, practice curiosity.
That is so profound. And it would translate so effectively, not to just relationships with others, but the relationship you have with yourself as you're going through the doctoral process and judging yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, be curious.
We are our own worst critics, right?
We really are. And particularly, I think this is a rampant thing in doctoral programs among students and some faculty too, is that we feel like we always have to prove ourselves. And sometimes it's like, well, I just messed up. And it's, I wonder why.
And where is this quote unquote mistake going to take me? Because it may
right.
be somewhere really interesting.
It can be if we follow it up with curiosity and humor.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for sharing your time with me today and all the listeners. And I look forward to having you back.
Thanks, Heather. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. And until then, don't forget to check out the show notes for some Peter-approved dad jokes. The Happy Doc Student Podcast is brought to you by expandyourhappy.com, and you can learn more there. One more thing, just a quick reminder that the information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only.